Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for Thursday, June 20th, 2013. This is Michael Norris. As always, I am joined by my partners in crime, Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates. How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
I'm doing great, guys.
Doing wonderful. Doing wonderful.
Good. How's the temperature down that way?
Well, today is in the 80s, cloudy.
It was 80 here today and clear.
I know the coast has been coast of Georgia has been getting hammered with rain the last several days.
Yeah, we've had some heavy rain. Yesterday it was raining real bad. I got one for y'all.
What's that?
I get to work early, you know, so anyhow, I get down there about 6:20, so about 6:30, call comes over the radio. There's an alligator somewhere. I said, oh, okay. An alligator here at 6:30 in the morning, start the morning. So I ride down there where they said it was, on the main drag there at Tyvee. So I look around. Another guy come on the radio and said, I'll meet you there. I said, okay. We look. So he said, let's go across the street and go out on the beach. I said, okay.
Hey, there's an alligator down here, alligators.
Yeah, right. You know how people do. Well, we went down there, sure enough, there was an alligator. It wasn't big, but I mean, it was 4 feet long, but he looked like a monster to us, you know. But took some stuff down there, and we finally got him. But I'm telling you, a 4 foot alligator is stronger than you think.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, yeah. He's strong enough to bite you, too.
Oh, let me tell you something, man. He wasn't a happy camper.
Ooh. What did y'all do with him?
Well, we took him up there, and I had a little cage, and we put him in the cage. And I put that noose around his neck. You know, it's a long pole.
Yeah.
And then I had something else, and I kept that on him, and it's another thing. You mash it, and the jaws come together. And we shut his mouth, and we taped his mouth up, and then we took it off the island, let him go. I'm thinking about getting a show.
Keep him and take him up to 109 Live Oak Drive in Jackson, Georgia, and turn him loose in the front yard.
Yeah, I heard that. Listen, I like the way you put the emphasis on a long pole.
It's real long, Bobby. I sent Taya the pictures of it. So he called me last night. He said, I got to thinking about you watching the news tonight. I said, really? He said, we've had so much rain here in Macon, the alligators are just coming out of wherever, the rivers or the creeks or wherever they are. And he said, one of them bit a hole in one of the deputy's bumper and flattened his tire. I guess they was going to call me to come up there and get it, but I...
the biggest alligator I've ever seen in my life in the wild was eaten out of a garbage can at the Bickerstaff Brick Plant right there by the Chattahoochee River there in Phoenix City.
Oh, yeah, Bickerstaff Brickyard, yeah.
Yes, sir. Me and my father-in-law used to go fishing down there in the backwaters of the Chattahoochee. He was retired from the Army. We'd put in there on Fort Benning and go down the river. Son, I saw that thing. I was in the boat, and he was way over there eating out of a garbage can or something, and he scared me.
Well, we used to go from Columbus to Eufaula, and you down in that area that you're talking about, you'd see them on the banks, man.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know how big that one you saw was, but, I mean, these jokers look like they're 8, 9 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Monsters. But I always thought alligators was in fresh water. These boys over here like salt water too, I reckon.
Really? Well, what you need to invest in is get you a big old treble hook and get you some rotten chicken, and you can catch them like they do on swamp people.
Well, I'm not trying. Well, I'm not. Well, look. Maybe if I get me about six of them, can I bring them and meet y'all somewhere and get out there with my alligators?
Hey, you can do like Gladys Killam used to and wrestle them.
Yeah, I'm not into that.
Who was it you told me Michael wrestled a dead alligator one time?
Duffy Truesdale.
I love it. Didn't he put the alligator over?
He put the alligator over.
And he did.
You know, I wrestled some guys I thought were dead.
I heard that.
And y'all. And I've wrestled some guys I wish I was dead.
Oh, man. You had, Tuffy always had an alligator named Rodney. He named all of his alligators. Like, I think he named all of his bears Victor. But, well, I saw something. Somebody put a clipping up on one of the wrestling websites that I saw, and it was from 1951 in Tampa, Florida. They had two guys wrestle a gorilla in the ring, and then they had chimpanzees wrestle teenagers, five teenagers against one chimpanzee. That's worse than a rocking kangaroo.
You don't want to fool no, or like a orangutan. You don't want to fool no orangutan.
Any kind of ape.
No, sir.
I don't want to deal with any kind of ape. Gordon Sully had an ape. I don't know what kind it was, but he kept it chained to a telephone pole in his backyard when he lived on Lake Keystone in Florida. And a friend of mine, my aunt and uncle at that time lived on Lake Keystone. I would spend the summers with them, but a friend of mine that lived there too was one of the neighbors. We'd go around there to Gordon's house, and he'd come out and talk to us, and that ape would be dumb. It wasn't a monkey. It didn't have a tail. This was an ape of some sort.
1973, I was in a ring with a gorilla.
Gorilla Monsoon, a gorilla Marconi.
Gorilla Watts.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
you didn't let him put a leg scissors on you, did you?
Oh, my God. Son.
You, Bubby, do you remember as a young guy carnivals that used to come around?
Oh, yeah.
Not like a circus, but I mean little carnivals.
Yeah.
Well, we had one to come to Columbus. It was right there on. At that cross from where King's Airport used to be. You remember King? Right across from them, this little carnival come to town, and there was a guy in Columbus, his name was Bobby McGee. He was on the police department, and Bobby was a nice guy, but he was a bad joker. I mean, he, good body, worked out all the time. He was bad. Nobody in Columbus fooled with Bobby. So they told him, you could go out there and box this chimpanzee. No, it was orangutan. So Bobby said, I'll go out there and work that orangutan over. So I don't know how many people showed up to watch it. That orangutan like beat him to death before they could get him out of there.
People don't realize how strong those things are.
The people, you start talking about wild animals, man, that's another world.
Oh. Some way or another, and I don't even know how it came up, was talking to Bill Dundee up at Ronnie West service, and he said he was talking about something came up about people boxing kangaroos. And he said a kangaroo looks like it's boxing with people. He said, but what you don't realize, a kangaroo has got these claws. And he said, if you get into a confrontation with a kangaroo in a while, he said that kangaroo will cut you all to pieces.
I'm sure they will.
Kill you dead.
No, that's the strength of it. It's in its tail. It whips its tail just like an alligator.
Speaking of that, the alligator soaked me. Hit his tail in that water. I told that guy with me, I said, look at me. I just got here. I'm slopping wet. But I didn't trust too much of the alligator about it. But you talk about a kangaroo. That, you know, they use their legs. You try to bounce off your legs like a kangaroo and see how far you get.
Ooh.
And you may get kicked with one of those things. Man, please. It's just, you can't.
Oh, man. Gimmick matches, gimmick matches. Maybe they should have booked the kangaroo against the McGuire twins.
Yeah, he could have taken my place that night.
Or a bear. Can you see the two of them trying to work with a bear?
Oh, my God.
They tear the ring down trying to get out of it.
Oh, man.
Well,
one of the funniest stories I've heard, there's a lot of stories out about guys working with bears. One of the funniest ones I've heard was Bob Kelly. It said that Bobby Fields told him, said he was working with a bear somewhere, and said Fields told him, said, look, when the bear gets on top of you, he said, just reach up between the bear's legs and grab the hair between his legs and pull straight down. And he said that bear
Don's
will let you
one,
go.
Don's the one that told him.
Oh, was it
Don
told him?
Told him, yeah.
Kelly
yeah,
said he reached up between that bear's legs and grabbed
Kelly
that hair, and that bear like killed him. He said he pulled that hair, and that bear squealed and like killed him.
Well, what Don told him is if you pull on the hair of his just above his foot where his foot bends, he'll roll over. Bob said he grabbed that bear by the hair and he just lifted it up and put all his weight on top of it. So then he reached over and pulled the hair on the other front paw and he put the other one down and lifted that one up and put all his weight on it. So then he grabbed both of them and pulled on it, and the bear just laid across him, and he finally got loose and went over and tagged Bobby. They were working a handicap match against the bear. Then he tapped Bobby Fields, and Bobby said, what in the world are you doing out there? He said, well, Don told me about that. He said, Don's terrified of bears. Well, the funniest story he ever told me about a bear was Speedy had a bear that day when they were running Louisiana. And Bill Golden was, he had his office in this mobile home in Lafayette that was across the street from the office there. They used it as the office and it was across the street from the TV station. But they would get up under the trailer after Jimmy had had a, or not Jimmy, Billy Golden had had a drink or two. They'd get up under the trailer and beat underneath the trailer and somebody outside would holler, the bear's loose. He would run from one end of the trailer to the other, and they'd run down there and beat on that end, and he'd run to the other end, and they'd beat on that end, and he'd run back to the other end. But Kelly said he was washing the bear one time, and Johnny Long came along and was aggravating. He was taking the hose and squirting him in the face with the collar that the bear had on was dry rotted, so he pulled on it enough to where it popped loose. He said he chased Johnny Long all the way across the street into a shopping center.
I bet that was a pretty sight, don't you?
Yeah. Luckily, one or the other of them didn't get hit by a car crossing the street. Oh, I do have, Bobby mentioned Jackie Fargo. We did suffer a wrestling-related loss yesterday. Slim Whitman died.
I saw
age
that.
Of 90.
I couldn't go to sleep last night. I was afraid the Martians were coming.
Well, the reason I say that death is wrestling related. When TBS first time I was able to watch TBS on the cable in Mobile, every commercial was a Slim Whitman commercial.
Yes, sir.
Do you know what the commercial said?
What's it?
That he sold more records than Elvis and the Beatles.
And you know that's absolutely true. If you take
because
he was big in he was big in Europe. I was reading an article on him last night after that was talking about after he died, and he was so popular in Europe that he outsold both of them.
How old was Slim?
He was 90.
90 years old. Did you ever see the movie Jerry Mars Attacks?
I don't think I did.
With Jack Nicholson. That's the way they killed the Martians. They'd play Slim Whitman records and their head would explode.
Come on, man.
Seriously. I'm serious. So when he died yesterday, I got scared. I figured the Martians was going to, you know, just invade now.
Yep.
Well, you're talking about Slim Whitman. You know, right after Slim Whitman commercials went away, then we had Zamfir.
Zamfir
and
the
pan flute.
Yeah, I remember that. I have heard that 40 years. That might have been just a made-up commercial.
And then there was Boxcar Willie there for a while.
Now I'm gonna tell you who was a Boxcar Willie fan, believe it or not. I had that tape. You know, Boxcar and Dusty were big buddies.
Really?
Yes, sir. And I had that cassette tape of that Boxcar Willie. As a matter of fact, I still got it on my iPod. It would happen to be in my truck one day. I wasn't paying no attention to what was on the radio, and I picked Barnett up to go somewhere, and Barnett heard it. Barnett loved Boxcar Willie. He said, "Turn that thing up loud where I can hear it." So everywhere we went, if I had it in there, I had to turn it up.
Yeah, please.
Better Slim Whitman, I guess.
Who was Slim Whitman from?
I have no clue. No,
I always thought it was a made-up situation. I had never heard of it.
No, look, he was around. He was a big star in the 50s. Yeah, I guess his biggest hit was in the early 50s, a song called Rose Marie. But he'd start that yodeling. I was like the Martians. Mars attacks, my head wanted to explode. Oh, Vio con Dios, all those songs. And he'd yodel all the way through. Maybe we should have hooked him up
like
with...
Go ahead, Mike.
I said maybe he should have hooked up somewhere along the line with Ida Martinez.
Oh, geez.
He passed away.
Well, it sounds like that Mike was a big fan of the Slim, huh?
I'm telling you.
No, it's just you couldn't. If you wanted to watch wrestling TBS, you had to sit through 100 commercials of him. Every time they went to a break, that was the commercial they played.
I wonder who paid for those commercials.
Whoever those mail order people were. I mean, you know, you got to remember when we went to, you know, when it went to, I don't know where you were watching the show from, Mike, but, you know, we went to the, when they went to the superstation and they had the two, you know, the two transmitters where they were beaming it up to the satellite and all over the world, you know, a lot of those mail order people were spending megabucks.
They were getting
large coverage, you know, for them.
They'd
sell those things for, you know, $14.99 plus shipping and handling, and the shipping and handling was almost as much as the record. And I'm sure they made tons of money.
But if you looked at the addresses on all those record offers like that, they were all out of one address in Richmond, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been Steinborn selling out of his base.
I thought it had been out of Logansville, Georgia.
Yeah. Smith Novelty Company.
Let me tell you something. I guarantee he was in on it somewhere.
Yeah. Charlie is the Georgia version of Ron Propeal.
I have seen
pocket
him like
fisherman. I'm sure he did.
I hadn't seen him like
that. You know, Propeal made all that stuff, the pocket fisherman and the Ronco
Medjumatic
Records,
and
that
all
was
that
all
stuff.
Him. Yeah, Ronco Records was Ron Propeal. The make drinking glasses out of Coke bottles with that little thing. That crazy. I spent one whole summer in Tampa making glasses. I found a bottle, and I had one of those bottle cutters and all that stuff. And I drove my aunt crazy because I kept making glasses. I said, well, I don't want these things.
But you'd done a piece of artwork, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I thought I was accomplishing something. Oh, man. What else did Propeal do? He did all kind of stuff besides the pocket fisherman.
He did the
probably
knives.
The Gimsu knives.
Yeah, he did those.
Listen, Charlie Smith gave my wife a set of Ginzu knives. I don't know where he got them at, but they was in a box. Well, they looked nice. I mean, they were nice-looking knives. And Debbie put them in the dishwasher to wash them so that, we could use them. And the knives rusted while they were in the dishwasher, messed
the
dishwasher
come
up.
Off and everything.
She threw them all in the garbage and told Charlie, if he ever sent another Ginzu knife here, she'd gut him.
You weren't supposed to wash them. You were just supposed to cut through tin cans and radiator hoses with them.
Yeah, it didn't say nothing about washing them, did it?
Help me.
I wasn't there, but I heard Rocket tell the story, and I've heard Charlie tell the story. He had some Charlie buys these ponchos. He's probably listening. He buys those ponchos and raincoats and stuff that he'll hit all these football games when it's raining. He stands out on a corner. He had some one time back in the early 70s, and he had bought them, and I don't remember. He told me one time he paid like 2 cents a piece for them or something. It wasn't nothing more than a little piece of cellophane or something that you unwrap and you put on. He sold Flash Monroe one for $5 because it was raining when they was leaving the TV station. And Rocket said Flash tore that thing up trying to put it on. Charlie told him no refunds.
Man.
I'll tell you something else, Charlie. See, I'm telling all Charlie's gimmicks here. He'll get hot at me. Charlie used to sell these balloons, and he'd have his worker balloon that he'd blow up. And that thing was about 7-8 feet tall. I mean, it was a huge balloon. You wrap your arm around it, and you'd have a handful of them other balloons, and you'd be selling them for $2 or $3 a piece. Of course, they wasn't blown up. You know, he just had that great big 8-foot one in his arm. You know, and people go and blow them balloons up. They wasn't but about 2 foot long.
What about the miniature size, Bobby?
Yeah, they thought this by that great big one, though.
No wonder he got fired all the time. Oh, man.
Did we talk about, speaking of getting fired, did we talk any at all about Colonel Buck Robley passing away when we got to
no.
No. We didn't bring that up, did we?
No, I don't think we did.
He was the colonel was a piece of work.
But,
Rocket said he used to do interviews down there in Louisiana, and he said he had his own code for all his girlfriends. He would he'd say, "Yep, the Colonel Buck Robley private jet will be landing at such and such time." And he'd give the runway number, and the runway number would be his hotel room number, so whoever was going to meet him would know where he'd be.
He was big buddies with Brody. I can't imagine those two out anywhere together.
Ooh.
Something's going to get torn up, or somebody's going to get hurt. In fact,
I couldn't hear anything Bobby said.
Buck was booking Georgia when Brody did that deal with the wheelchair, wasn't he, Bobby?
Yeah, I think he was. Yeah, I think Buck was another his booking in Atlanta. I think he was another victim of the animal that Atlanta was. He did good. I mean, I never worked for him anywhere. You know, I didn't even work for him here, but I was around him here. Jerry, was he booking out there when you were in out that way?
No, Bobby, he was not.
No, I. You know, everybody's talked about he was a brilliant mind for the business.
He was. He was.
They said he made a lot of money, had a lot of great angles, but when he came to Georgia, he just never quite clicked. And there again, I attribute that. Like I say, Atlanta was a strange animal with this TV we had. You had to, I don't know, you just there were certain things you could do and get away with and certain things you couldn't do. But he wasn't here a long time. But, yeah, everybody I've ever talked to said he was just had a great mind for the business.
He did. He could work too, buddy.
That's what I heard.
Buck was his own enemy, but when it come to knowing this business, he knew it. He really did. He drew a ton of money for Watts after I left.
Yeah.
Yeah, he I think when Watson and McGirt split and Watts started Mid-South, Roby was there, and I think he was involved in, I'm assuming he was booking because he was involved in the majority of the angles that were going on there. And, you know, he decided to become babyface. And looking at Buck Roby, you'd have never thought he'd get over as a babyface, but he certainly did. Then he turned Junkyard Dog from heel to babyface, and that just really set it on fire. And they must have had a million matches with Mike George and Bob Sweetan, and every one of them good. Because that was four good workers. Well, Junkyard Dog wasn't all that good a worker, but he was in the right place at the right time, and he had the charisma. And I never saw anybody as over in Louisiana as he was. He was like Dusty was in Florida.
That was all Buck's doing.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, he had he always, you could tell when he had the book, he'd always bring Brody in. Brody never really stayed anywhere a long time. I don't know if it was just because of his personality he didn't want to stay someplace a long time, or whether whoever was booking just decided once you'd seen him for a month or so, you'd seen pretty much all there was to him, and it was time to move him on. I mean, he was a tremendous personality as far as, you know, he did great interviews and all that stuff. He was never all that great a worker as far as I saw. Talking about Brody, but did you ever work with him, Jerry?
Yes, I did.
What was he like in the ring? How was he to work with?
Just very limited. He only did a few things. I might have told this story on this show once before. They flew, we had done TV in Atlanta on a Saturday. They had a big tournament out in Kansas City. And I was in Detroit that night, so Ted dropped me off at the airport. I went to Detroit. This tournament was at 3 o'clock Sunday in Kansas City, so Ted flew on out to Kansas City. So I get to Kansas City, and everybody was there. Murdoch and Rhodes, Ernie Ladd and Brody, Dick the Bruiser, Jody was there, Jody Hamilton. It was a big tournament. I mean, everybody was there. So the tournament wound up, the four guys left was Ted and I against Brody and Ernie Ladd. So Ted, he'd never been in the ring with Brody, and I had. And so we're getting instructions. You know how big Ernie was. And Brody, he was probably my height, but weighed 275. You know, he was an impressive-looking guy with that hair and all. He looked at Ted. You know what he told Ted? He said, "I don't work with midgets," in a real sarcastic. So we go back to the corner. Ted said, "What's that about?" I said, "Don't worry about him, Ted." I said, he's just a jerk. Don't worry about it." And the match was fine, you know. But just to say something like that, you know. And let me tell you, he took advantage of guys. Don't think
he
didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I think he beat Ricky Morton up somewhere. Wasn't it Ricky?
I don't know.
Well, you know, you're talking about, I mean, my opinion in $2 will get you a cup of coffee at the Waffle House. But, I think you hit right on it, Mike. You couldn't, a guy like that, you couldn't book him in a long-range program. Not the way we sold our business back then, because he would expose your business eventually, because Jerry's right. He could only do so much. I mean, you can't but stomp around the ring and huff and puff. At some point, you got to lock up and work.
Thank you, Bobby. Not saying our generation was any better than anybody else's. Everybody thinks that, right? But, Bobby, in that era, you know, if you was going to stay on top, you had to do more than what you just described. And you know it, and everybody else knows it.
Yeah.
And the type guy he was, he Vern used him up quite a bit. So he was up there. He told me the story himself. I don't know who he was doing his thing with up there in Minneapolis. So he'd been there a while, and they were in Denver. Oh, I'll tell you who it was. It was Bockwinkel. Denver is sold out. They get to the building. There's no Brody. No Brody. It's getting late. So Vern gets on the phone and calls his house. Guess who answered? Brody. He said, "How's the house?" Vern said, "How's the house?" He said, "It's sold out. We've been working for ever how long, you know, a couple of months to get this thing." He no-showed him. He thought that he laughed about it. He told me, he said, "I thought that was funny." He said, "I got Vern Gagne." No, you got yourself.
Yeah.
And
well,
to me,
he left here. When he came in here the Saturday that he did that thing with the wheelchair thing, where he and you know part of that wasn't his fault. The guy put him in the ring with. He was just a guy that we had to come, you know, for him to eat him up on TV. And the guy was scared of him, and he grabbed him, and he wouldn't turn him loose. And I mean, it was just a bad situation all the way around. And then he puts the guy in a wheelchair, and he kicks that wheelchair across, you know, and it rolls in front of Gordon, the switchboard went crazy. I mean, Turner's calling. I mean, it was a bad situation, you know, with people raising Cain about that wheelchair. And the wheelchair just happened to be there. It was there for a commercial or something. It was just it wasn't planned. It was just a strange coincidence of things that happened. But he was, when all of that stuff went down, everybody started raising Cain about that wheelchair. He was supposed to be somewhere that Saturday night. And he left TV station, went, got on plane, went home.
That's him.
He was afraid that he was going to get arrested or something. So, you know, he wasn't here long. But, again, I these kind of guys, and it wasn't just him. It wasn't just him. I know to a lot of people he is the wrestling business. To a lot of people he's a living legend and all of this other crap. But I saw Hulk Hogan get fired. Of course, he was Sterling Golden at the time. But he was fired because couldn't do nothing with him. He couldn't work. Ole kept him here for 2 weeks, and he finally told him. He said, "Look, man," he said, "we can't do nothing with you. You know, you're limited. You can't do anything." And, you know, for those of us in the business that watched him, I mean, he made a lot of money, and he put wrestling on a different level, and you can't knock success. But if you sit here and watch his matches, he like Ringling Brothers, buddy. If you've seen him, you've seen him.
Yeah. He never did get any better.
No, he didn't. I got an interview on tape around here somewhere with Lou Thesz. He's about 80 years old, and he said it, you know, during this interview. He said he don't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch, and he said, "I'll wrestle him right now, and I'll beat him."
He would have, too.
Oh, sure he would have.
That's what always amazed me about the business, how guys that could really work could had to be subjected to that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of guys. Of course, a lot of them wound up being promoters. I mean, Dick the Bruiser was never a great. He was in the 50s. I mean, he was a draw in the 50s because he was so wild. But after, you know, into the 70s and even early 80s, he's still putting himself over. Of course, he was the promoter on the territory in Indianapolis, but. You know, I was never all that impressed with Dick the Bruiser.
Well, in the 70s, he would come into Atlanta. Did he ever work Columbus, Jerry?
Way back, Bobby.
Yeah.
Way back.
He would come into Atlanta. They would bring him in here late 60s, early 70s. They would bring him in here, but it was always just a one-time deal. You know, they'd bring him in as a bounty hunter. Somebody hired him or whatever. He would come in. And, I mean, he was a wild man, and he was very impressive looking when you didn't see him every week.
Yes, he was.
But it's the same thing. How could you, you know, week after week after week after week?
I don't understand how the Detroit territory, you know, when, you know, 52 weeks a year, the Sheik's going to work a 3-minute match and get blood and get juice on his opponent, and, you know, 3.5 minutes, he's disqualified, and he's running back to the dressing room week after week after week after week, and he's always the champion, and nobody can beat him because he always gets disqualified. I mean, I'd quit going, is what I was saying.
Yeah.
But,
if you'd have brought that to Georgia, you could have folded up camp.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that they was educated.
Or Florida.
You know?
Yeah.
The only time the Sheik did anything in Atlanta that meant anything was when they booked him against Abdullah for 3 or 4 or 5 matches at the Omni over the course of about a year, and they got progressively wilder and fought through the crowd and all that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, that kind of generated some excitement. But you knew what it was going to be going in, and they wanted to see those two guys kill each other. But, yeah, you couldn't. Yeah, I mean, I said the same thing, and here again, everybody thinks this is sour grapes, but it's not. But I said the same thing about New York. You watch the matches in New York, and you watch the matches in Atlanta. I'd much rather see the product in Atlanta than I had what was going on up there.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
It's just
a
different style of, you know.
Roberto Soto told me, I don't know how many times, that after his brother Manny went to work for Vince, he couldn't work anymore. You know, they were a hot thing in Florida and in Louisiana and Georgia in the late 60s, and then Manny went to New York. And Soto told me that they brought Soto into the Carolinas, and they wanted to bring his brother in, but they wanted him to work under a hood. So they brought him in as El Rayo. And the first match, they worked a tag match. I think they were working Gene and Ole. And Manny blew up so bad, and, you know, they just ended the match quick, and George Scott was booking and asked Manny what was going on. He said, I can't breathe with the mask on. So he said, okay, you can take it off. So the next week it was the Soto brothers against the Anderson brothers. The same thing happened again. Manny blew up, but he couldn't work. He was up there used to that New York, you know, everything was slow motion, punch, kick, and no mat work, and no really, you know, for one drop kick and match, whatever. And so George Scott told him, pulled him aside and told both of them, I can't use them anymore. Roberto said, my brother got me fired because he couldn't work anymore.
There was a lot of territories, you know, the kick and punch. Tennessee was that way, you know. Georgia and Florida and the Carolinas were more on the same pace, the same level, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the Andersons. They were the most hated heels there, and they never really did anything to deserve heel heat as far as their working goes, you know. They wrestled, and that's what the territories were used to. But then, you know, it all changed. Well, guys, we got a call that's been holding from Tampa. I want to get them on the line with us real quick. Call from Tampa, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
All right.
Good. My name's C.M. Christ, and I've been around the show business. An interesting subject when you got talking about pansies and bears and so on and so forth. Number one, I don't think you ever saw a wrestling orangutan, because they're it's a very aggressive and they want to be part of the party. Gorillas are very passive and orangutans are in the middle. They always use chimpanzees to do the when they would wrestle somebody in the cage in the truck. And there was a couple of interesting things I think that might be interesting to you guys. Number one, you can't shoot with a chimpanzee. There's no way you're going to win. 90-pound chimpanzee will take anybody out. Number one, they used to tell them that you pin your shoulders to the mat, like a 1, 2, 3. You can't do it. Because even the one I had some that I worked as a circus act. And, you know, if you were playing with them, you couldn't hold their shoulders down. It's against their natural instincts. And, of course, you know, there was some gas to that. they had bars up above. So if the chimpanzee wanted to, he would grab the top bar. If you thought you were going to be a threat, and he'd kick you in the mouth. And a chimp in the wild won't just bite you. He'll bite you to get you down, but he ain't kick your ribs.
Hmm.
You know, I only saw one in my life. I've seen a couple wrestling bears, and that was toughy. And the chimps, you don't have a chance. What they used to do, if they thought that the guy was going to shoot with the chimp, usually guys would lose their courage when they went in there because they were into the unknown. And they would put them in army pants, and when they cue the chimp would pull their pants down to do a nonviolent finish. But they used to put a football helmet on the guy, the old-fashioned leather football helmet, and they'd lace it up real tight. So all that did was give the chimp a hook to grab onto. Once he saw the football helmet, that was the sign that was going to try to shoot with it. They're going to talk. Hello.
I think we may have lost. Hello, you there? Your phone's breaking up real bad. We're getting a lot of static.
I think we lost him because I'm getting a lot of feedback on my end, too.
Yeah.
I hear a duck and something.
Yeah, okay.
There we go.
Well, I just put him back on mute. Let's see. Caller from Tampa, you may want to call back in because we were getting a lot of chopping noises and everything, so you may want to hang up and call back in if you want to talk to us some more.
But, I thought there was a white black duck on there.
Yeah, with a clucking, it's what it sounded like. It was, very interesting point he made. Talk about jump up and grab the bars, man. I mean, them things are so, can you imagine a 90-pound chimpanzee grabbing a bar above your head and coming at you with his feet?
No.
I can't imagine me being in there with one anyway.
I can't either.
That'd be worse than a kangaroo.
Yeah. That's just, oh, geez.
But we were talking about people that were limited as far as their work and everything. Like I said, the Sheik, I mean, how long did those matches work with them? Were they in the ring, 2 minutes before they were fighting out the audience?
Him and Abdullah?
Yeah.
Well, I refereed 3 or 4 of them. They would start out. They would just, you'd go through the Abdullah's coat hanger. He'd hook the Sheik's nose, or he'd have a stick or something, and he'd, they'd both be bleeding. And I worked one match at the Omni where they were bleeding. They both got on me. I was bleeding. It was one of those deals where they run everybody in to separate them, and they fought all over the building back to the dressing room. Sheik threw the fire at him one time, and Abdullah ducked, and he hit me. It's the only time I ever got a week off of pay the whole time I was in the business. It was just your normal Abdullah Sheik. No matter who they were working with, just at this particular time, they both had the same gimmick, and they just, I don't ever remember an outcome to any of the matches. I don't ever remember a clear-cut ending to anything they ever did. But those were the two guys that would fight up into the crowd. It used to drive Lieutenant Wright crazy. He'd have them police around the ring, and he'd have that extra. He would bring extra people down when those two guys were wrestling each other because he knew, man. And they would be around us trying to protect us, but we were just at the mercy of wherever we were because those guys didn't care. They'd just go up into bleachers.
After I got
on the promotion end of it, I know how much liability that is, and I know how much it costs to defend yourself. And it ain't no wonder the promoters screamed and hollered.
Yeah, you couldn't do that this day and time, man.
No, sir.
No, sir. Well, guys, we got our caller from Tampa back. Let me get him back with us.
I'm sorry,
you,
your
you
phone
doing?
Was...
How you doing, guys? How far did I get?
Much better.
Where did we leave off?
About
the helmet.
Chimpanzees and the football helmet.
Oh, yeah. Well, when they put the football helmet in, they knew that the guy was going to try to shoot on the chimp. But all that did was give a natural handle for the chimp.
I can't imagine anybody wanting to think that they can shoot on a wild animal.
Yeah, well, they had a muzzle on. But, you know, there's no, you know, I had like five of them over the years. And years ago when you didn't have to have a lot of permits and so on and so forth. But I'll tell a Paris story real quick in a minute, but I'd like to, you know, just say a little remembrances for Ronnie because he was my friend for 22 or 3 years. And, you know, I'm kind of the guy that got him in the circus business, so.
I think I know who this is, but who is this?
C.M. Christen, my name.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I also got Bill over there.
Right, and I'm with Cole Brothers now as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I know.
So great.
And I do.
Well, it's good to finally have you on with us because I know you and I had swapped emails back and forth. And we were going to try and get you on a year or so ago, and we just never did hook
up.
Yeah,
just never. We just never got anything together. One of those things. I'll tell you real, but again, you know, I don't know if Jerry remembers me. Back about beginning in 91, I went to work for World Championship Wrestling. Down the street from the hotel, I saw Jerry's gym. I went in there and spent a couple hours with him and gave him some passes and stuff for the guys. And, you know, the month before they had drawn 300 people. The next month we turned about 1,000 away. So I don't know if Jerry remembers that. It's a long time ago.
I remember that. Yes,
you know,
I do.
Remember I came in the gym and we just sat around and cut up the jackpots a little bit. And
I remember that. Yes, I do.
Well, you have a good memory.
Well, it's just that everybody in the wrestling business remembers something free.
But I want to tell a quick, and if Jody's been on here and told this bear story, because this is secondhand, Jody told me this story. That he was, you know, when he was starting out years ago, he was up in the Pacific Northwest and he had a bear. And he was in there with Don Leo Jonathan. And the bear was trying to bite through the muzzle. So Don Leo got his front arm, I guess, and armbarred him. And he hurt the bear so bad, the bear squealed and ran, dragging the trainer behind him. So they go on for about 10 days or whatever, making a little loop. And the bear is fine. About 10 days later, here comes Don Leo. The minute the bear saw him, off he goes again.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those. I want to tell one little quick story, and this really has nothing to do with nothing. But back in 19, let me see. I'm getting so old, I can't remember anything anymore. This would have been 1968. I did in the wintertime, unless it wasn't on the road. I did the ring announcer for a little outlaw thing in Bradenton, and that's been back when outlaw was outlaw. And they've got a 4-girl tag team match, and the one girl is Wee Bonnie Blue. I don't know what the hell this is. So the promoter was refereeing the match, and Wee Bonnie Blue was in a mask. Now in one corner was his mother-in-law and his wife's sister. In the other corner was his wife. And Wee Bonnie Blue, who was his 13-year-old son in drag.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and we were going to get the gorilla, but they didn't want to pay that much money. It was Bob Knoll out of Sharpton Springs, Florida. And I'm sure when you guys talk about the gorilla and so on, that was Tommy, the gorilla called Tommy. And, you know, Bob said, for $175, this is back in 1968, I'll bring the gorilla. He said, but you can't have one of the guys work with him. It's got to be me. He said, so my wife can handle the gorilla. She can get him to the ring, and I'll just be the obnoxious guy at ringside. Put your guy in there, get your guy out. And they had a little routine that they used to do at the park, little park they had all the time, and that was they would wrestle, and then he would rip off Bob's T-shirt. That was, you know, the routine. So, but they didn't want to go for that much money, so. But back, you know, back in the old, you know, you couldn't do any of that stuff today. I mean, you know.
No, not at all.
You couldn't even have a chimpanzee today. I mean, you have to buy one captive bred. When I used to buy them, they were $500 a piece. Now they're like $35,000, $40,000 a piece. And you have to meet all the government regulations to be able to transport one and to house them and so on. It'd be impossible.
Yeah, last I heard, I think if he's still alive, Tuffy, they had taken all his bears away from him because he had Tuffy going in Cherokee, North Carolina. He was
had
a little
Cherokee
souvenir place or something
alive.
Like that.
I don't know if he's still alive or not.
I don't know. You know, he and Nick Adams worked. You know, they owned bears together, and they would one go one way and the other would go the other way. Nick used to come into Mobile quite a bit.
Well, can you imagine hauling an animal around like they used to in one of them old Cadillac ambulances with the cage in the back, it'd be 120 degrees, and the bears, and, you know, it just wouldn't happen today.
No, not at all.
I think one of those ads you were talking about were in the book that Bob Knowles wife wrote, and I think it was the chimpanzee against 10 colored boys.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Pat O'Hara was the promoter.
Who was that?
That show. Pat O'Hara.
Yeah.
He wrestled too, but he was also the promoter. He was promoting in Miami.
Fort Myers.
Fort Myers. I think he eventually sold out to Saul Weingroff, and then Weingroff tried to run opposition to Luttrell for a while and then finally gave it up.
But I mean, could you imagine the liability and stuff today? I mean,
back then
they used to have them sign a phony release and stuff. What they used to do a lot is take those things and they would take two old-time girl shows and that and book it on a lot close to a military base, like in the springtime. It'd be kind of a standalone thing. But all the stuff we used to do, you know, we'd sit around and talk about all the stuff we used to do and all the stuff we used to be able to do.
Yeah.
You know, the kids I got working for me now, you know, I always used to hate it when people would say, when I was your age, and I can't, and I find myself doing it all the time. But the world has changed. I mean, just like the wrestling business, it's nothing like I was brought up around or was involved in.
No, not at all.
You know,
not at all.
It just doesn't even hold any interest to me anymore.
No, it doesn't.
Not like fight with weed eaters.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine out of Canada, they called him Kazarni.
Yeah.
They called me. I was in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, and they wanted to use our equipment as a background for these vignettes they were going to do for him as teasers. And I said, you know, we made a financial arrangement and so on. And they said in 60 to 90 days you'll get your check. And I said, no, you're wrong. I said, I got a sign on my wall that says no go, no show. So we finally made arrangements. They're going to bring me a check and so on and so forth. But anyway, Nick's a hell of a nice guy and a competent guy. And you know, me and a friend of mine who used to be in the business who worked for me, he said, here's this kid that's, you know, he was in his early 30s. He said he's worked 15 years to get here, and now they just saddled him with the worst gimmick they ever come up with. Yeah. And, of course, he didn't last long because the gimmick was terrible. And you know, it used to be, I used to make me laugh because, you know, wrestling people would speak in carny, and carnival people never did. You know, not in my era. Because one time it was in Dothan, doing some business with Ronnie Bullard, and we're talking over the business some of the guys start talking in Kearney, and Ronnie says, forget it, he speaks it better than you do. Well, I mean, you know, if you're sitting there with the boss isn't going to bring you into the dressing room unless unless you belong there, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, guys, well, I want to thank you for letting me be on here. I wanted to say a little remembrance for Ronnie. I lost a dear friend. We all did.
Yes.
We all did.
Yes, he is. I miss him. I think at least twice, three times a week. Let me call Ronnie and ask him about this. I'm like, I can't call Ronnie anymore.
But, yeah, I got to tell one little funny story. When I was working for Atlanta for TBS, Ronnie and I became the troubleshooters. And if one of those guys would screw up the town, they'd either send me or send Ronnie. If it really got bad, they'd send both of us. And we had a little system. We would, you know, because we liked each other's company. And you guys know, on being on the road, staying in a room by yourself, after a while, gets pretty old. So we'd share a room, you know, just so we enjoyed each other's company. So we get a plan going, and you know, in the morning at 7 o'clock, I go one way, he go the other. We meet at lunch and separate again. And you all know, God bless him, how hot-headed Ronnie can get. So the guy that screwed this thing up, he sees him from about 50 feet down the corridor, breaks into a dead run, and he's choking the guy out against the wall. And I had to go pull him off of Ronnie. I mean, off this idiot promoter. But that was Ronnie.
That was Ronnie. Yep. Yeah.
So, guys, I want to thank you for the time. I enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
And it's good to talk to you again, Jerry, after 20-some years.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you calling in. It's good to hear from you.
All right. Take care now, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, guys, we got just a couple minutes left. I need to wind up with a couple things and hit the hay since I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And you do that every day, though, don't you, Jerry?
I get up at 5.
Okay.
Bobby sleeps in about 10, I'm sure.
I'm the 5:30 guy here.
Bobby's on the road by 6 o'clock all the time. He's got to fight that Atlanta traffic all the time. So.
Oh, man.
He gets an early start. Well, next week I'll be calling from Long Island. I'm going to be on Long Island for 5 long weeks. So I got 2 towns I'm doing there, so I leave here Monday and head that way. But I'll have good company. I'll have Tom Jr. is going to be on the island with me.
How far are you from there, Mike?
3.5-hour drive.
Okay.
Unless I catch the ferry. And then it's 3 hours and 15 minutes, but about $100 across on the ferry, and I don't have that spare, so I'm going to drive.
$100 across on the ferry.
I don't know how much it is. It's expensive, though, but it may not be $100, but it's more than just, you know,
yeah,
$15. Let me put it that way.
Well, I will be checking in my cell phone next week because I have Bible school at the church, so.
All
but
right.
I will call in from wherever I'm at amongst all the little chillings.
You can put us on speakerphone. They'll learn a lot.
I heard that.
and find out what would be Bobby's last gig.
Like. Yeah, that'll be my last night.
Oh no. Oh man. Well, guys, as always, I appreciate it, and we will get together. Hey, Bo didn't get a chance to call in, so just reading his Facebook post, I know he's got 15-20 stories already built up to tell. So.
Well, I know he sent two home.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He sent two home, and got a replacement, and then sent him home.
Send him on. I give you just so you appreciate this, Jerry. I give you just quick. Bo will relate this. He can tell it better than me. But they had some MMA guys show up at one of their shows.
Uh oh.
And were making fun of them. And the top babyface out there is Buddy Wayne's grandson. And Bo told him in the dressing room, said, "We're gonna have to lay them in. We're gonna have to work real snug." And he said, "We're gonna have to convince them." So Buddy Wayne's grandson went out there, and whoever he was working with, he had him hard weigh him. And he said he looks like his face went through a windshield. And he said when the show was over that night, he said the guy running the town, the sponsor, wanted to call 911. He said he looked at Bo and he went, "Hey, that's real blood." He said, "No kidding." And he said when the MMA guys left that night, said they told him, said, "You guys hit harder than we ever thought about hitting each other."
Really?
Sure did. So he said, you know, he said, "We're working hard," but two of the guys left. One guy that he got the replacement he got from Atlanta, he told Bo, he says, "My head ain't into working like this." And Bo said, "See you." So.
Good for him.
They're doing good, but they're doing what they went out there to do, and they're having a good time. But there'll be another book come out of this trip, I'm sure. I just got the second book. I'm just getting into it, but there'll be another one coming.
Okay. Well, both you listen to us, so we're with you in spirit, man. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, buddy.
Keeping what's left of our business alive. Well, guys, I will talk to you next week, and we'll get together and have fun again next week.
You guys have a great week, guys.
All right.
You too.
Have a good weekend. Have a good show, Michael.
Thanks, sir.
Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.